Hey everyone, welcome to this week's edition of The Magic Box. I am Tristan Sean Gregson here with Kyle Eck, as always, to talk Cube, to talk magic in general. We'll start out today's show. I'm going to like to thank the guys over at Brainstorm Brewery at GatheringMagic.com. I actually just finished up a guest spot on their podcast where they talk magic finance. So all those questions that we would get here at this show, like, what do I do with my Ryle Zarex? But should I get them now? Should I get them later?
Yeah.
Hopefully that kind of stuff is covered in a podcast like that, so check that out in the near future. Beyond that, we've got topics galore, maybe, for you today. We're talking about
a potpourri of subjects.
Yeah, we've got the top four of You Make the Card, and how our feelings break down on those. We've got M14 spoiler updates galore, it feels like. There's been a ton of new cards. And the big topic for today, one that's kind of come up in passing the last few weeks, is Vintage dead? And moreover, is Cube really the new Vintage? How do those things interconnect? Where do those communities blend? Where are they segregated? What's the future going to look like? So, there we have it. I don't think I'm missing anything else. We don't really need to talk about Modern Masters. That doesn't really apply to us at all.
I mean, it applies in the, like you were just talking about, the finance sense. You know.
For your cube, maybe?
Yeah, because, like, obviously, like, reprints are going to lower the price of some of the outliers.
So. I will say, to go off on a mild tangent, in Mark Rosewater's article from this Monday, there was talk, you know, like, he had, like a hidden clue to what his preview card for next week would be. And the community had kind of boiled it down, and it's most likely Doubling Season.
Oh, really?
And a card like Doubling Season...
I hadn't even seen that.
...isn't exactly a Modern Masters kind of, like, modern staple kind of card, but more of what I consider to be a card printed in the modern era of Magic that's very popular and maybe worth something. So in that regard, you kind of have to ask the question of, are you looking for make the card update?
Yeah,
it's weird that it's already gone. You got to ask yourself, you know, how do you feel about that in the set? I mean, is having $20-$25 casual rares something that you like in Modern Masters? Does that really fit with what you feel like the tone of the set would be, or is it kind of more of a diverging from what's like? Well, I want modern playable staple cards. I don't want cards that. Does it just say like the vote is over?
This is the. Keep talking.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Ignore me.
Eck is finding the information on the top four of You Make the Card. I was surprised at that's actually more of a talking point than I thought it was going to be in terms of what the expectations might be of Modern Masters. But I think that's not really a big topic for us in the Cube cast. I mean, obviously the goal for us is we want card availability to be as high as possible so people will be able to build cubes, play with those cards, etc., etc.
Plus new art, always kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a circumstance in which I would want to switch out
an older for
an older. You know, 99 times out of 100, I am an original printing purist, mostly because that's where my, like, deepest connections with a card come from.
I agree with that for the most part. I am, however, a huge sucker for the, like, the Judge foils that they've done, where it's the old frame. Like, old artifact frame sort of Fire and Ice. Or, like, old frame Bear Confidant, old frame Noble Hierarch. Like, those to me look really, really, really cool.
Noble is probably my favorite of those, because it's the least intrusive to the rest of the card. It just takes the design and brings it back to what we loved of Magic. Yeah, I think that's a bit of an outlier, actually. I think that the Judge Foil Dark Confidant kind of skirts that line, where there's, like, all this extra DCI inking and stuff on it. But again, for the most part, I get 99 times out of 100, if it's original artwork versus a new printing of a card, I'm going to stick with original artwork. However, there have been times where it's like, you know, Pro Tour Eternal Dragon. The artwork looks so superior to what I feel like. F&M Bloodbraid Elf.
Yeah.
And maybe a Johnny Goldmane. I don't know, I have more of an affinity for a Johnny Goldmane, the Pro Tour foil, because I played in that season, so
yeah.
I really like that one.
I know.
But again, you know, 99 times out of 100, original artwork's going with it.
Sure.
And there could be, you know, to me, maybe in Modern Masters, there is something a lot that's going to be that kind of Bloodbraid Elf caliber.
Right, it's going to be some awesome-looking thing.
Yeah, like. That we'll switch to. But as the room populates here, we'll switch over to pick one, pack one, from the cube of the day. Let her know what we're looking at, Eck.
So for today's pick one, we have Forbid, Bloodline Keeper, Wormcoil Engine, Demonic Tutor, Sinkhole, Sword of Light and Shadow, Goblin Settler, Spellskite, Drawna,
Blood Chief. Oh no, something Blood Chief.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Go on.
Rewind, Urnim Dijin, Daze, Sulfur Elemental, Windswept Heath, and Balance.
Well, so personally for me,
good pack.
Calastria Blood Chief.
Drawn a Calastria Blood Chief. There we go. Something like that.
I mean, this is an easy and saucy balance.
Interesting. I don't necessarily think it's that easy that it's balanced.
Okay, well, it's good, because if it wasn't, then this wouldn't be much of a pack.
Like, the three cards that jump out to me in terms of power level in this pack are Balance, Demonic Tutor, and Wormcoil Engine. And of those three, there are very, very... There are basically no decks where I'm not going to play Demonic Tutor, and there are very few decks where I'm not going to play Wormcoil Engine. But there are plenty of decks where I'm not going to play Balance.
I'm probably going to agree with you there. Although, I can't imagine a cube deck and where I'm not playing Wormcoil Engine. Even if I'm mono red aggro, don't have a card in my deck that costs less than 3 mana, and I have the Fire Blast, like, I still want the Wormcoil Engine in my deck because
just in case.
Any time that you are going to get flooded and be able to cast it, it's going to be so good. Wormcoil Engine has always been the everyman's titan. It's hard to shy away from that. I mean, now we're looking at a circumstance where we just have to match it up right against Demonic Tutor and Cube,
yeah,
which is a big deal.
I just think, like, Demonic Tutor is so powerful. I mean, obviously its power level depends on what else you draft, but, like, it fits in every deck, it's insane. It's fast enough where it doesn't really disrupt your curve very often. You know, it's just...
Sorry, I'll let you finish.
It's just excellent. There's not a single deck where unless I have no access to black mana and I have really strong color commitments in other colors, and there's no way I can splash it, you know, I always want to try and fit Demonic Tutor in my deck.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm still taking that balance just because even my draft deck from last week's Cube League was an excellent example of how ridiculous balance can be. I had the...
Balance obviously can be very, very powerful, but, you know, if you don't feel like drafting, like, a control deck or a balance kind of centric deck, you know, maybe one of the other options. I don't feel like you're giving up a ton on power level by taking, like, Demonic Tutor or Wormcoil Engine over balance. They just kind of fit into different strategies, and it becomes more of, like, a personal preference thing. Like, I'd almost rather just take Demonic Tutor so that I can decide what I'm going to play later on in my picks.
That's fine. You're pick one, pack one. You're never wrong for taking Demonic Tutor, and you're pretty much never wrong for taking Wormcoil Engine. I mean, you know, outside of maybe the top 20 or 30 cards in Cube on pick one, pack one, which is probably something we should probably just make a list of and put in the show. Wormcoil Engine, Demonic Tutor are right there as far as you can't go wrong by taking those cards right out of the gate. No one's going to look at your pool later and be like, oh, you know, why? What's this Wormcoil Engine doing here? What's this Demonic Tutor being here? Like, I see you have a Demonic Tutor in your mono-white, you know, creature pool. Like, oh, I'll take it first, and you know, things went a different direction. No one's gonna say that to you.
Yeah, I mean, I just look at it more, you know, like I was saying, like, I've had times where I take balance, right? Like, early on in a draft, like, oh, it's the best card in the pack, I'll take balance, like, sweet. But then, like, just kind of the way cards come down or the, you know, as the draft continues, and you kind of, like, lay it out at the end, you're like, oh, wait a minute, balance is horrible in this deck, you know? Like, it requires, like, a very specific construction, which doesn't always come up.
It's no Hero Bladehold. As Grand Prix Portland winner Sam Pardy would tell us. Sorry, there's just a very famous Team Rochester draft where we were on the same team, and we opened a pack that had Balance and Hero, and he was playing white. It was, like, probably near the middle of the draft, and I was like, you have to take Balance. Balance is just so good. Like, you'd so build your deck around it. He begrudgingly took it, wanting the Hero Bladehold in the pack, and then ended up not playing the Balance in his deck and complained the entire day about how much he wished it was a Hero Bladehold.
Yeah, I mean, Balance is very good, but if you, like, it's never a good idea to think in absolutes, right?
No, I mean, with, like, Mana Rocks and just kind of heading towards more controlish, powerful creatures. Like, that Balance just screams to me that's the card I want out of this pack. But, you know, it's excellent. I'm glad we have different picks, and we have, you know, what I feel like clear reasons for those picks today. So I'm going with Balance. You're going with DT?
Yeah.
And someone gets an amazing second or third pick Wurmcoil Engine.
So, yeah, someone, like, down the road is going to be very confused. Like, the third pick out of that pack, someone's going to just be like, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, that happens in Cube all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Also, for this week's episode, the key drinking phrase, if you're playing along with the drink game at home, is every time X says the phrase, you know. Because we're here, and not everyone knows, so you should just tell them.
Let them know.
You should just tell them. Someone earlier in the week had reminded me that.
It's always, I see.
Anytime you could catch us on a phrase that we overuse in the show,
it becomes a drinking phrase?
Instantly the drink phrase for the next show.
Alcoholic Pee Wee Herman show. Alright, so shall we get into the scenario?
So we have two scenarios. Now, that was my pack from a draft, mm-hmm. and I took that Balance. In that same draft, we're actually going to see a scenario that's a few picks down the road.
So, this is said scenario. So, in this pack now, we have four cards so far. The cards that we have are Balance, Chandran and Lar, Moat, and Winds of Wrath.
Strong. This Control.
This is your favorite art tape. I already know what you're taking this pack to.
Okay.
This pack contains Geralt's Messenger, Gorehouse Chainwalker, Celestial Colonnade, Twilight Mire, Apocrysite, Upheaval, Gale Powder Mage, Temple Garden, Scroll Rack, Palancron, and Sylvan Library. What are you taking? Why?
I think it's either Celestial Colonnade or Scroll Rack.
I pegged you as a Scroll Rack man. I'm willing to go on record here to say that I really do not like Scroll Rack at all.
Okay.
It is, to me, just the dirtliest of all dirtles. He's the mayor of Dirtletown.
Look, in like a week and a half, we're adding five more fetch lands to the cube, and you're still gonna try to crap on Scroll Rack? Okay, well.
Like, I would much rather just take Apocrysite.
Okay. I mean, no, Apocrysite's a fine card to take out of this pack. I think that I could take Sylvan Library with the hope to get maybe that Temple Garden to come back or another green-white land. Like, as soon as I take Balance and I'm moving into a Balance deck, I want to take as many artifact and enchantment cards as possible.
Right, I understand that.
Because they dodge the balancing. That way you can dump your hand and effectively attempt to mind twist your opponent while at the same time Wrath of Godding them. And then if you can go for the complete trifecta of somehow getting them, then you've money in the bank to this one card.
I mean, absolutely. And I'm not saying that Skorak is not a better card with the card Balance, but in this deck, I would rather have Apocrysite, because this deck also tends to be very slow. And Apocrysite is a excellent speed bump that can also double as a win condition.
I agree. This deck is four magic cards, so it's not really a deck yet.
The way this archetype always comes down the pipe, like, you already have a Chandran and Alar, and red-white is typically where you want to be in, like, this kind of balanced deck.
Well, why red?
Because you can have things like the Wildfires are good there, the Earthquake, like, additional sweepers like the Earthquake and the Rolling Earthquake,
Now, it's good to point out that the Wildfires play well with the Mana Rocks. You're going to be evaluating, to be higher picks because you have a card like Balance already. So I will give you that tends to lead towards more Boros, like the big red-white play style. You know, heaven forbid you get the Greater Gargadon.
Also, typically, like, you know, if you were a white-blue deck, you're going to have a lot more card drawing, and you're going to have a lot more incentive to keep cards in your hand. You know, counter spells, that's true. Bounce, stuff like that. Whereas in red-white, you don't necessarily have that tendency. Like, many more of your cards are going to be things you deploy, like, immediately, and you're not necessarily worried about, like, keeping a full grip to respond to what your opponent's doing.
Right,
you know, so it plays better with the balance.
Right, well, you know, one of the other things you don't balance when you resolve balance is life totals. So if you can find ways to cast your lightning bolts, your stagger shocks, before casting balance, is another way to get that Wrath of God and that Mind Twist at the same time.
Yeah.
When your opponent's at 5 and you're at 15 or something.
Right.
I concur. You know, to me, I'm snapping off the Skorak because I still feel like I'm playing like a Mote balance kind of combo control deck in a way. Like, the combo is to set up the soft lock if my opponent can't do anything.
Right, I mean, and I get that. I just think that, like, this deck, I mean, it is one of the slower archetypes in queue. It's not the slowest, but it's certainly not the fastest. And having a card like Apocrysite, which is not only an excellent speed bump, but it doubles as a win condition.
One of the best speed bumps in cube, also known as the Jesus Artifact, for those that aren't familiar at home, on the third day, he always rises to the battlefield again.
Yeah, and he just really, like, this deck, I'm always happy to have Apocrysite, you know. Stuff like Wall of Omens is also good here. Obviously.
A little less excited about Wall of Omens, because...
Well, I mean, okay, yeah. Because you want balance to be completely one-sided all the time.
Well, if you don't get all the creatures with balance, you usually lose.
That's not
true. One of the few times... Okay, so in the draft, the deck I drafted last week, which was the Oath, I had Oath, plus I had balance, plus I had Zurnorb. When I would Oath with one creature on the board, it was usually Frost Titan. So whatever the creature my opponent kept on the battlefield, it was effectively locked down anyway. So, like, sure. There are rare circumstances like that, but we're getting too much into, like, drafting a specific deck. You take Apocrysite out of this pack. Mm-hmm. I take Skorak out of this pack. I like both. They're colorless. You know, we're not necessarily going red-white with a Chandra, although we're very reticent of the fact that we're looking to kind of go into this kind of big red-white archetype to take advantage of cards like Balance to their best possible use, as well as, you know, Mote and Planeswalkers.
I'm a big fan of this nickname for Apocrysite, by the way.
Ah!
Tupocrysite?
Tupocrysite.
I like it.
Never dies.
Alright.
So that's scenario one. Scenario two... Ooh.
This is a saucy one. When we were putting it together, I was like, ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
This one apparently is very interesting deck. Tell the people what we're looking at home.
Okay, so, same situation. You've got four cards. You're looking at a new pack. The cards that you have right now are Shrine of Burning Rage, Ancestral Recall, Consecrated Sphinx, and Cryptic Command. The pack you open, or get past, rather, is Huntmaster of the Fells, Ancient Tomb, Careful Consideration, Unburial Rites, Niv-Mizzet Draco Genius, Molten Steel Dragon, Journey to Nowhere, Warren Power Stone, Oracle of Moldaya, Scepter of Dominance, Dismiss.
So you took a Shrine of Burning Rage's first pick, being like, I'm gonna draft the Sweet Red deck. You immediately took a left turn into Ancestral Recall,
because that's what
Consecrated
you
Sphinx, Cryptic Command. It wasn't like a brief nudge into blue, being
it's not like you went red card, blue card, red card, red card.
Yeah.
You just went completely like.
This also looks like a pretty standard play for me.
One of the nice things about Shrine of Burning Rage, though, is that, you know, you've got three blue cards. You're still probably playing the Shrine of Burning Rage.
And Shrine of Burning Rage is just that good. You can play it in the mono blue deck. So I don't feel... I mean, the other nice thing is there are kind of three red cards in this pack, but at the same time, there's kind of zero red cards in this pack.
I look at it as, you know, the obvious pick here with your card that wants a bunch of red spells and all your blue is like, oh, just take the Mr. Dragon Genius. Like, it's red-blue. But I think that while we could even argue that we want it, or like, that would be a way to go. I think we can get it on the wheel.
Agreed.
Because it's not super popular, and double blue, double red is just so hard to cast that not a lot of other people are going to be picking it up.
I just see so many permutations of this draft where I don't end up playing Niv-Mizzet. Not only am I not taking it, I'm not at all concerned with it coming back on the wheel one way or the other. Like, you know, probably it will. Probably I'll take it. And then who knows? But it's nothing I'm banking on right here. I'm not looking at that card. I'm dismissing Dismiss, because it's just inferior Cryptic Command.
You can't have too many 4-mana counter spells.
I think you can have too many 4-mana
counter spells. That's what I meant.
Yeah, you can have...
You cannot successfully draft a deck that has a bunch of 4-mana counter spells. So you have to pick and choose, and you already have the best one.
So Dismiss is out of the equation.
You know what I like here is Journey to Nowhere.
Okay, I mean, I can get behind that.
That's obviously a bit of like another turn, you know, there's no reason, we don't have any white cards yet, or this red card, but Journey is just excellent removal,
Premier removal.
It's cheap enough that we could play it and leave counter magic open, because that's clearly kind of where we're going with this deck. Blue-white's obviously very good. But, again, we don't even necessarily commit to blue-white. Like, we could just splash it. Like,
right.
If we see a...
We're blue-red. Select... We can find a way to play it. We're right. Blue anything. We find a way to play it. I think that Journey is probably my... it's probably my third pick in this pack. I mean, I'm taking Ancient Tomb.
Really?
Pretty clearly. Like, I want to get to that Consecrated Sphinx as fast as possible. Because that card is just such a beating. And if I'm playing heavy blue, I want to be able to catch up.
I like Oracle of Moldiah also, if you wanted to play it. Like, blue-green is also fun, and that's a great way to get to Consecrated Sphinx quickly. My biggest problem with Ancient Tomb in, like, the control deck, which is kind of very clearly, like, where we're kind of headed with this, with our Cryptic Command and our Consecrated Sphinx.
We could just be, like, superior blue spells tap out. Like, we have a counterspell, but we have the counterspell that also functions as every other modal effect. Like,
It can also be horrible.
It can be fog. It can be capsize. It can be all these things. And when I draft a Consecrated Sphinx, I'm not super stoked to play Consecrated Sphinx in the I'm going to hold all the counterspells all day long deck. Because I never feel like there's a good time to cast it.
I just, in this deck, you know, very often looking at those cards and kind of thinking, okay, what's my deck going to look like down the road? You know, I don't want lands that cause me damage. Like, I don't think this is going to be a deck that takes maximum effect for Ancient Tomb. And it's probably not going to be winning quickly enough to completely mitigate the life loss.
See, I think it's early enough in the draft that I can use it to my advantage. Like, I'm taking this Ancient Tomb. This isn't like pick 35, where I have just all blue and red mana symbols or all blue and white mana symbols. I know that I can start to, you know, kind of move things that direction. Now, when I open up that pack 2 and it has a Wyrmcoil Engine in it, that Wyrmcoil Engine stock has just gone through the roof because I have an Ancient Tomb, as well as any kind of shields up maneuver kind of cards that we can kind of power out a little bit faster with a card like Ancient Tomb. Now, again, if I wasn't taking Ancient Tomb, I would probably take the Careful Consideration, and then if I wasn't taking Careful Consideration, I would probably take Journey to Nowhere in that order. I agree with you completely about, you know, premier removal spells. If you're playing the blue deck, being able to answer things on the cheap and very efficiently, Journey is that card. And then from there, you get all kinds of dirtily with things like Oracle and Mourn Power Stone, or just going off the deep end with Molten Steel Dragon to try to get them.
I do love a Molten Steel Dragon.
Yeah. So I'm going with Tomb. That's my pick.
I think I'm going to go with Journey. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with Journey. I could also see if you really like the blue-green deck, you know, Oracle is certainly very powerful, and nothing wrong with taking that. I think the blue cards specifically in this pack are a trap.
The two blue cards, because they both cost 4?
Well, and one is effectively a sorcery. Like, Careful Consideration is something you're more often than not casting in your main phase.
Maybe. Like, I don't know. I could see both.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
powering through as always. Mm-hmm. Since you have you make the card up, should we just go to there?
Yeah, sure. We can talk about that.
Just in case you're listening to this, watching this for the first time, you're not all familiar with You Make the Card. Wizards has graciously let us as a community, guiding us slowly towards a magic card they deem appropriate to make.
What's interesting is I didn't really read this that closely the first time around. Eldritch Rites, which won the vote by a pretty big margin, was disqualified.
I had heard about that, but I also had not read it.
Yeah, so Demonic Bargain snuck in, which is sweet, because that's the one I voted for.
Oh, I didn't even realize. So, why don't you catch the people up at home on what four... We're down to 4 black enchantments. We're just picking rules text at this point. What do you like here? Or, what do we have to choose from?
What do we got? So, they're doing it, it's bracket style, so these are heads-up matchups, you vote for which one you prefer. The first heads-up is Consuming Contract, which is at the beginning of your upkeep, choose one, draw 2 cards, lose 2 life, or destroy target creature, or blank third thing they haven't picked yet, or you lose the game, and you cannot choose the same mode twice. Blood in the Watering Can is it's a competitor, it's at the beginning of each end step, if you've lost life this turn, you can return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
And the other pairing, you've got Revenge of Necromancy, which is whenever an opponent discards a creature, put a 2/2 black zombie to play. Whenever they discard a land, add 2 black men to your mana pool. And whenever they discard a non-creature, non-land card, draw a card. And the last one is Demonic Bargain, which enters the battlefield with X counters on it. At the end of your upkeep, remove a counter, and then draw a card. If it has no counters left on it, you sacrifice the enchantment, and an opponent gets a 5/5 indestructible black flying demon token.
I think Demonic Bargain of the last four standing is probably the one that I'm most excited about. I think it's really going to come down to that. Although
it's unfortunate because I like,
you like both the bottom
Revenge
two?
Of Necromancy and Demonic Bargain, and we can only get one because of that pairing.
It feels, I mean, I'm really surprised that the Consuming Contract card made it to the round of four. I think that maybe for the players out there, the blank on there is really like this open book that they feel like you could make anything out of.
My problem with the blank is that, so there's an asterisk. That ability was originally cast a spell without paying its mana cost.
Right. Which is now,
which is too powerful.
Right.
So the problem I have here is, what ability are they going to put there that makes suspend for you lose the game worth playing? So, there was a conversation on Reddit about what that should be, what that ability should be.
And what was the consensus the Reddit community came to?
It was very, like, people had all these different ideas, you know, zombify guy, do this, do that, you know, demonic tutor, search for a thing, whatever. And my opinion on that ability is that, like, even if it was cast a spell without paying its mana cost, like, that, to me, doesn't even, like, it's obviously very out of line with the other two in terms of power level, but it's not too good to put on a card that says suspend for you lose the game. So, I would rather have that ability be, like, some significant cost that you pay and get rid of it. Like, if you have at least 3 cards in your hand, discard 3 cards, then return Consuming Contract to your hand.
That's too good.
So you have to discard 3 cards to get it back?
We had this conversation last week where I was like, you know, I think you could sacrifice X permanence. We just need to define what X is. Maybe it's 5. Sacrifice 5 permanence.
And then return to your hand?
No, just, that's it.
But then you still lose the game the next turn.
Why?
Oh, because you could sacrifice this, you mean?
Yeah.
But that's horrible. Like, so now you're playing an enchantment that is draw 2, lose 2, and destroy a guy. You sacrifice 5 permanents, and this takes place over 3 turns?
Maybe it's not 5. Maybe it's 4.
Maybe it's 1.
Maybe it's each player sacrifices 5 permanents.
Like, that is so effing bad. Like, the first two abilities on this card are just so underwhelming to me that...
Yeah, I don't know why it couldn't have just been draw 2 cards.
Or, like, there's just nothing about this card screams that I want to put it in a deck on power level.
I'm still the most confused why it made it to the round of 4. I'm actually most surprised it made it to the round of 8, just because it's one of those cards that forces the players in the game to keep track of modes used once over.
Right, like, it's going to be convoluted to keep this in play.
I mean, in a 6-player EDH game where it's like your turn comes up every 20 minutes.
Or if you bounce, like, oh, I returned it to his hand. Does he get to choose the new modes because it's the same thing? Or whatever, like... It's just... This card was just very... I'm just unexcited by it.
Meh.
I wasn't a big fan of the Blood in the Watering Can either.
I don't know. I mean, we already kind of touched on how good it is with fetch lands. I think that... This is going to be way more of a Vanish into Memory than it is going to be a Crucible of Worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty clear. I think we kind of came to that realization when we saw exactly what the top 8 choices were.
None of the top 8 were really, like, thrilling to me.
You can't, I mean, I like
this may be greedy. I would have taken any number of art submissions over these.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely want Consuming Plague over any of these cards. But, I mean, these are way more, like, creative and deeper than the kind of seemingly...
I thought mine were creative.
No, yours was sweet. I really liked yours, actually. But we're working with what we have.
Like, you know, it's hard also when looking at these cards because we don't know their mana costs. And I think that, like, part of, like, my envisioning them is, like, what can I see them costing this at?
Yeah, that's the other problem.
So, like, that's the problem I see, like, looking at Blood in the Watering Can. In my head, I can already see this card costing 4 and a black. And that's putrid.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to cost three or less because it's too powerful.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like you said, fetch lands? Like, that's really good.
But, I mean, you still have, it only returns it to your hand. It's like, let's say, turn one, what are you going to do? Like, entomb Gristlebrand, and then you, like, get it back on a fetch land? Like,
so you return to your hand?
Yeah, I mean, like, that's not
no, but
ridiculous. Like
it's just, like, a very good value card. Like,
late in the game it is.
Even in the
mid-game. So you have to make it cost a lot so that there aren't, like, value turns where you get to cast it. But you don't even trigger it until end of turn.
Yeah.
Like, so you can't, like, cast it for two, trigger it, get a guy back, cast that guy with your remaining three or four mana, and then do something. Like, obviously this card is going to be either played early in a game when you're not getting value out of it just because it's part of your curve, which is the most competitive way to cost the card, or you're going to make it cost a lot for more mana and have it be a circumstance where you're going, more likely than not, you're going to cast it in the same turn where you're not doing anything else. Now, you know, you could still, on turn five, cast it, activate Bargain or Necro or...
Yeah, whatever. I mean, that's obviously very good. So in chat, someone mentioned, this could cost black, black, black. I'd really prefer if, and this is just a personal preference for me, I feel like making everything that is black cost nothing but black mana is kind of, like, lame and kind of a cop-out. Like... Not everything needs to be Necropotence and Phyrexian Obliterator.
Like, yeah, and very few things are. It just happens to be that the best cards in black these days are the blackest cards.
I just saw a lot of submissions like on Twitter and other places that were just like, random abilities, black, 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 black. Like, and the cards are just all black mana.
There's something about this day and age where they, just, like, they feel like the black mage needs to be the blackest of mages. So... At the end of the day, still blood in the watering can is the vote on the top portion. On the bottom portion, I'm going with Demonic Bargain.
Yeah. I like both of these cards, though. Revenge of Necromancy is cool. I mean, just think of, like, the cornucopia of things that will happen when you cast Mind Twist.
Yeah, I mean, in that regard, I could definitely...
Like,
maybe,
that's, like, super fun. Like, ooh, what do I get? What do I get?
The casual, like, players don't like... discard, so it's
it made it through this round, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Like that's it. I do like Demonic Bargain. I think Demonic Bargain is going to be a better card. Again, there's no specifying on how we get X counters on it. I would assume it's going to cost like X and a black mana, and at that cost, like, that's a fine little temporary Phyrexian Arena kind of thing. That's flexible, you know.
I mean, just talk about a card that's full of flavor, though. Like, that's what I really like about Demonic Bargain. Like,
I like that
gonna,
too.
If we're gonna leave behind any hopes and dreams of having a competitive Magic card out of You Make the Card this round,
get the flavor.
Which we're pretty sure is where we're at right now. Then you're gonna want full flavor. If you're not gonna have a card that's gonna be a tournament staple, that's gonna be, you know, a lot of competitive decks are gonna want to play it, you're gonna want to have something that, you know, at least the casual players are out there, it's like, oh yeah, you know, had the Demonic Bargain, like, that was really cool. I felt like that was a magical set of circumstances.
Yeah. I do like the description on it that someone made, which is Aeon Chronicler and they get the guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty accurate.
And that all makes sense. The only thing it feels kind of out of flavor is that it's a black indestructible creature, but I feel like it kind of has to be in order for it to kind of have any chance of standing up against what would be black removal as you'd be drawing off these things. I think,
sure.
I mean, no one wants to put Hexproof on it, so...
That's a horrible idea.
Well, there you have it. That's the current update on You Make the Card. We'd be interested to see Blood in the Water and Cannon Demonic Bargain down the road, and then, you know, from there...
But who knows? Maybe one of the other ones. We'll have a completely new conversation next week.
Yeah. Revenge of Necromancy. I mean, hopefully we're a week away from, like, let's really talk casting costs and see if these cards have
casting costs is definitely going to be an interesting
any chance one. Of being cast outside of a nice long game.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to get a range, and it's not going to be a wide one.
No, it won't be. Again, this isn't so much like You Make the Card from scratch as much as it's Wizards slowly guides you towards a card that they deem to be acceptable.
Yeah.
Alright, well, that does it for You Make the Card. Do you want to move on to M14 spoilers, or do you want to go...
Yeah.
You've got M14 spoilers up on the screen already. We're just kind of I mean, with Dragon's Maze, the way we broke down Mythic Spoiler, we just kind of glossed over pretty much every card as we went anyway, even though there's a lot that aren't cube considerations. But last week, you know, we had Archangel of Thune, which was a great talking point, so we'll just kind of pick up on the spoiler from there. I don't really... There's a bit of like a mild beast theme in M14, which I can get behind.
Yeah.
I think on our lands episode, we talked briefly about Contested Cliffs.
Yeah.
And Contested Cliffs stock rised just a little bit every time that we saw...
500% to 5 cents.
I more meant like in a cube worthy of playing sense, yeah. not a value sense. I think that the card Contested Cliffs was already going to be worth more than that small move.
Of course, that's always just going to have random tribal tribal elements in them.
I like that. I think that, you know, one of the things, in the earliest days of Magic when I was playing, you saw Goblin King, and you're like, I want to make a Goblin deck.
Right. It's the easiest thing to, like, you know, start new players on.
Right. I think that, you know, cards like Goblin King, Lord of Atlantis, Crusade, are kind of those very first baby steps in deck construction. Where...
But also even cards like Archangel of Thune. Right, when they have a very obvious, like, powerful effect on a trigger, like, now I want to make a deck that gains a lot of life, and gains it, you know, in increments. Like, it's important for core sets to have those kind of, like, put the ball on the tee and let players hit it, you know, kind of like deck ideas.
But you also want them to be fun and engaging. Like, you don't want it to be so boring and mundane. Like, a lot of us know of Portal and remember how that kind of played out. And at the end of the day, you know, Portal worked, but it wasn't the most exciting, engaging, and thought-provoking format of Magic ever.
No.
So, with Corset, I mean, at least there's more inklings of, like, well, you know, I want to know everything that beasts can do. I can put counters on them, I can make them do stuff, jump through hoops, I can get bonuses from having them, so...
Yeah. Although, if they don't reprint Wirewood Savage, it's all going to be for naught.
That would be sweet for limited.
For limited? Oh.
Green really needs that.
Slivers versus Beasts.
So, first from the new batch, we've got, what is it, Mega Sliver?
Yeah, so these are, the majority of cards that have been spoiled so far are kind of like commons and uncommons, and I think most of these are also from,
Well, the 15th was the last time we talked about it.
Yeah.
We've got,
so, Super Big Sliver.
Yeah, it's 6/6, vanilla 6/6 Sliver for 6, which I think is like the pre-release card or something.
Something like that.
Yeah, so, Slivers, they be ever war.
I mean,
last week's episode, if you
important
haven't...
Important for Slivers, costing a single colored mana.
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest part of this card.
Don't go too far away from that theme, Wizards, if you're going to make us... we will get to the rest of the cards on the spoiler, all in due time.
We're going chronologically.
Yeah. So, last week we talked about Slivers. Go back to that episode where we kind of recap the Slivers currently in existence pre-M14... There's only a few select ones we were super stoked about back then, and the vanilla 6/6 for 6 isn't exactly breaking that mold.
No, but I mean, if you have, like, a proper, like, if you were going to say, I'm going to put Slivers into the cube, this is one you would put in there.
I would put this one in over Might Sliver.
Yeah, like, this one, you know, it holds its own by itself. It's not exciting, but it's still a 6/6, like...
A vanilla 6/6?
Vanilla Titan? Like, whatever. It's not great.
The Titan of bland flavors.
It's not great, but, like, the fact that it gives you such a huge upside if you're playing, like, the Slivers thing.
Right.
Like, if you wanted to do that, this would be a guy that you would add.
We have, Awaken the Ancient, which is this triple red and a colorless for an aura that enchants a mountain and makes said mountain a 7/7 giant creature. And finally, on these enchant lands...
They give it haste.
Yeah, so it's no longer... You're not sitting on MTGO being like...
I feel like that's like MTGO errata.
Exactly. You're hovering. Okay, that one says Summoning Sickness, so that was the one I played this turn. Hover. I just want to make sure I don't put on the wrong one.
Oh, I misclicked.
I know. Activate Koth. 4/4 with the yellow on the bottom. You're like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
So as far as cube goes, I paid for Blistering Firecat, but I can't attack with it unless I have 5 mana, and it doesn't have any kind of evasion.
But, I mean, it's also gonna live. I mean, like, there are a lot of cubes with, like, say, you know, I don't think, card costs 5, right? Like, you should really be looking at it as that it costs 5.
Right, right.
So, like, this is a lot more like comparing it to, say, Thunderblust or Thundermaw Hellkite or something like that.
Both cards I would rather have in lieu of this card.
I don't know. I think I would rather have this than Thunderblast.
Well, okay. See, with like,
I mean, obviously, I'd rather have Thundermaw Hellkite than this, but
let's try to stop and compare it to its ancestors, being the Zendikons and the
Genjus
and the Genjus. Just the Genjus in general. Because, like, we've talked on the show previously about running Genju of the Cedars, and I would rather have a Genju of the Cedars over an Awaken the Ancients, and I'd rather have a Genju of the Spires over an Awaken the Ancients every day of the week.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a function of, you know, the Genjus especially, because they're so cheap, they're very much more about getting a threat and you're not worried about keeping the land. Whereas this, like, the concern of the land dying in combat is pretty minimal. Like, obviously, like, it can get
bounced. Yeah, but you get buyback on those Genjus.
Yeah, but, like, you're still throwing lands at your opponent. Like, they're just different, right? Like,
I guess. This is, like,
you're converting one land into a guy, but, like, you're not constantly throwing more and more land at the problem. Like, I could see this fitting into a deck with a higher curve. Whereas, like, Genju, I don't want in a deck where anything costs more than four. Like, don't want this to be the top end. In, like, I would rather have Genju of the Spires than this in, like, the aggressive red deck. But, like, in, like, the big red
deck. The Wildfire decks?
Right. Yeah, like, I would rather
just have don't sack it as a land.
Yeah. It's not very exciting, but it's not, like, the worst thing I've ever seen.
End of the day, it has no shot.
No.
So we'll roll up
cycle one of the boring whatnots.
We do get
raise the sliver alarm.
Yeah,
Sliver's
call as a sorcery.
Double
strike sliver has come down in cost, which everyone's very happy about. It was previously bone scythe sliver is the sliver in question.
2/2, 3 and a white, double strike.
Yeah. Now, previously, to get double strike on your slivers, you had to pay 6 mana, and you had a 3/3 in the form of Fury Sliver.
Right.
So, in that regard, definite upgrade.
Another one that I think...
It's weird that it's white to me. I don't...
Well, the double strike... Yeah, I don't know. It seems more white. I mean, like, Grixie Crusader was white. Or Mirror Crusader, that one. So, you know, he's fine. I mean, again, this is another sliver that kind of strikes me as, like, would be good enough if you are running slivers to be by himself. 2/2 double strike, not the worst thing in the world. Like, he's going to play decent defense.
He's a 4/2.
Yeah.
Man, he's a giant cockroach.
I mean, he plays a lot better defense than giant cockroach. Be real. All
right. I do like this. You know, we've struggled with the wildfires and how they really fit into the cube, and we've played Goblin Goon, although we cut in the most recent update. Now, a riff on that would be Halimar Watchkeep. And I think that Halimar Watchkeep kind of occupies very similar space to Goblin Goon. Now, it can always block and, in theory, eventually attack. But it's just... Like, the red aggressive decks can very rarely take advantage of it.
It's so bad outside of the Wildfire. Like, the trick is to find cards that are good for Wildfire that aren't blanks elsewhere.
Right, and in the red aggressive creature decks, you know, you're gonna hopefully either just straight up have more creatures than your opponents, or you're gonna be able to burn out your opponent's creatures to make Goblin Goon be able to attack. And I understand that Halimar Watchkeep is a different card, it seems equally as difficult to get going with less flexibility in, like, real cube matches.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't strike me as a card that I would ever want to play outside of the deck that has multiple Wildfires.
Yeah, I'm never the red mage, and I'm, like, super stoked to get
I have a 1/5.
Planeswalker heavy deck. Alright, moving on up.
Devout Invocation.
Is that even worth talking about? It's like...
Convoke for Angels.
7 mana sorcery where you can tap.
Untap any number of untapped creatures, and you get 4/4 Angels for each one you do it for.
Yeah, that's not a cube card.
Costs 7.
Exactly.
Although, really, like, they can't make that cost much less than...
Have it be good.
Deal.
Yeah.
Seraph of the Sword, the new Dawn Elemental kind of thing.
Poor Dawn Elemental.
Remember when this card cost 4 white mana? Now it costs 1 white mana.
But only the combat damage is prevented. How dare they?
Yeah. A Giant's Chosen is kind of cool.
Whenever an enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, put a 2/2 white cat creature onto the battlefield. If that enchantment is an aura, you may attach it to the token.
It's like a weird beatdown enchantress.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that, like...
It's a hill giant, quite literally,
yeah.
When it's not using its not-so-insane ability of making more grizzly bears. I'm not into it. I mean, I...
There just aren't enough enchantments in Cube.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult to make enough.
I'm just trying to brainstorm in my head, like, what would make this card cube-worthy? Like, what would you have to adjust on the stats on this card?
Add draw a card.
Put a 2/2 to play and draw a card, and it still wouldn't make the cube. Because we have, like, a dozen auras. Most of them are, like, arrest.
Yeah, but, like, Oblivion Ring with this thing, Journey to Nowhere with this thing, like, those are good.
Okay.
Here's a question. Is Strategic Planning playable for 3 mana?
No, it is not. That was the answer to that question. Yeah, Glimpse the Future, for everyone who doesn't want to shell out to get a Strategic Planning for their cube, which I recommend getting a Strategic Planning for your cube. It's a very good card. You can now pay an additional colorless to have that effect, should you choose to.
It is black-bordered, which is
Very relevant. So we have a new Jace creature. We have Jace's Eel.
Jace's Mindseeker.
Jace's and Giant Battlefield, Eel.
Mill your opponent for 5, cast an instant or sorcery from among them for free,
For a 6-mana Air Elemental, you get to mill your opponent for 5, and maybe cast an instant or a sorcery. I would rather have Djinn of Wishes.
Yeah. And that hasn't been in a long time.
Remember when it was in?
I do.
Yeah. Remember when we would get it all the time and M10 sealed on the...
I think I set some kind of world record for number of Djinn of Wishes open in M10 Limited. Not the worst thing to have a record of. I had more of those than most of the commons in the set.
There was like
That's three, not an exaggeration.
There was like 3 seals in a row that you hit. At least 1 Djinn of Wishes.
Yeah. Grim Return.
Choose target creature card in a graveyard that was put into there from the battlefield this turn. Put that card onto the battlefield under your control. So this is an instant.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't...
Get a guy that died this turn.
This is not a terrible card.
No.
It is not a spectacular card.
I mean...
It just seems like if you're
not...
It
combos with removal, which most things already do.
I thought you were going to say Revelark when you started with the sound.
Everything combos with Revelark.
Yes, it combos with Revelark, it combos with Moldrift, it combos with...
sure.
Siege Gang Commander.
Shriek
Bomb. Oh, no.
What's this stupid? Deranged Hermit.
Yeah, ooh, Deranged Hermit, ooh.
Bring back mid combat for the
So
bump.
Really what we're saying is the cards that are excellent with recurring
good cards
Nightmare,
combo with this card.
Like a strange one-shot. I'm just trying to think of circumstances where you can like really get your opponent, because you can hit your opponent's creatures.
I think if you have Slaughter Pact in your cube, this card gets better.
Oh, okay.
Like, you have to figure out ways that you could realistically kill a guy and cast this in the same turn, because it's not going to be like, oh, I can rely on combat damage to get what I want into the yard. So, like, Slaughter Pact is a great way, like, starting on turn 3, you can immediately, like, smoke a guy, get something back if you need to. So, having more, like, if you also play Snuff Out.
Yeah.
Right? Or even, like, Vendetta.
There are definitely opportunities to get some card advantage out of this card, where it's like, it's your opponent's first main, or any time prior. Kill their guy. Like, okay, my guy is dead. Wham, wham, wham. Attack you. They're like, okay, well, return your guy from the graveyard to the battlefield under my control. I will block.
Or, I mean, this is also good in situations where you can control your own creatures dying and want to use them again. Fulminator Mage. Avalanche Riders is also excellent with this. Ember Hauler, if you want to go real deep.
That's pretty deep.
Like, Moldrifter, you know... Stuff like that where you're kind of planning on your guys dying or planning on killing them to do something else.
I mean, there are plenty of of just value creatures in Cube where it's like, this card can do lots of stuff. I mean, Necromancy, Corpse Dance, those are very excellent cards, even when used, like, you know, anytime you ever cast Necromancy at instant speed is really what we're looking at on this exact card.
But with additional restrictions.
Huh? No?
Well, oh, I...
When you cast Necromancy as an instant, you're effectively casting... Well, okay, this card is better.
Well, it's better and worse.
How is it worse?
Because...
Oh, the has to have died this turn. All
right. Right, versus you get to keep it forever.
Sorry, yeah. I was just thinking more along the lines of, like, you're killing stuff, and... Things are dying a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know...
It's interesting.
Yeah,
which is certainly more than I can say for a lot of these other
black cards. I mean, black is still the most open color in terms of let's kind of mess with this space and figure out things to do with it. Mm-hmm. And we're already talking about, you know, more carrion feeder type magic cards. We can reset our Geist Honored Monks more often. We can reset our Sun Titans more often. We can...
Technotron, sorry to interrupt. This does not actually do anything with Living End. Because Living End does not put cards from the battlefield into the graveyard. It exiles them and then changes their zones. So it does not trigger on death effects. It does not trigger put into a graveyard from play, whatever. That doesn't work. The more you know.
This happens when you play Living End a lot in Modern.
Yeah. Yes, actually. So moving on. Liliana's Reaver.
I have yet to read this card. So far, I see a four power guy for 4 mana with Death Touch.
That's and
also a zombie. So I feel strong right out of the gate. Now I'm going to read it and see how I feel when it's all said and done.
Okay, you go ahead.
When Liliana's Reaver deals combat damage to a player, that player discards a card, and you put a 2/2 onto the battlefield tapped? Yes, Eck did say you know. That is a drink. But you guys are way too sober if you're still catching up at this point. This card is not terrible. Actually, you know what? Let me rephrase that. I'm going to have to seriously look at the 4 drops in Cube. This might actually be a contender.
I mean, I might get tomatoes thrown at me for saying it, but I would much rather have this than Juz Ambition.
You dick.
I went there.
At least say Braids.
Don't well, say... obviously I want this one.
Oh my god, Braids. This card plays so good with Braids.
Oh, yeah. That's what Braids combos with more 4 drops.
It does, but you always have 4. You never have more than 4, but you always have 4.
I do like this card, though. All kidding aside, I think that this is one that we'll probably be making room for.
Huh, yeah. It's awkward because it's kind of... Maybe it's competing with Graveborn Muse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Graveborn Muse would love to see this card next to its next to it on the battlefield.
Combo.
Which maybe means it's competing with Braids, which means I hate you, Liliana's Reaver. You go to hell and you die!
Oh god, Braids so bad. Rise of the Dark Realms, that's not a card.
So for 9 mana, you do something? Yeah, that's
9 mana, you get every card in every graveyard.
Every card?
Every creature.
Oh,
sorry.
Had me going there for a second. So we have a new... What was the Gorehorn Minotaur? That was the Bloodthirst one. This guy, same casting cost. We got a 5/3. So it's a new Juggernaut?
It attacks each turn unless you control a creature named Advocate of the Beast.
Oh my gosh.
Who's down here.
We are so full of flavor. Who remembers Kukus and the Keeper of Kukus?
Ah, yeah.
Ah, yes. An excellent, excellent combination.
The Keeper of Kukus has protection from red.
He can.
If you pay red.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
So that's cute and full-flavored. I love that as far as M14 goes in general, and we have more beasts for our buck.
Molten Birth. Put 2/1/1 red elemental creature tokens onto the battlefield. Then flip a coin. Oh, I don't like it already. If you win the flip, return this to its owner's hand, and it costs 3 mana.
Oh, you're going to head out to Cube for the night, Usman? I'm jealous. I'll say you have +1 viewer to your stream. Oh.
Simone Birth is interesting, but it says flip a coin on it.
So perhaps, do you remember Hanabi Blast?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like Hanabi Blast?
Hanabi Blast was very different than this card. First of all, Shock is a lot better than put 2/1/1s into play.
Okay, well, it's interesting because I was going to agree with you. I was going to say I'd rather have Hanabi Blast in my cube than this card. This is like one of those kind of limited red kind of, I mean, this is actually kind of a core set thing too, where it's like, you get a little bit. You might get a little bit more value, depending on how things work out for you. That's the chance part of playing the chaos in red, and it's part of the color wheel. So that is Molten Rebirth. Moving on to Ogre Battle Driver, we have another Hill Giant at the cost of red, red, and two colorless. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, that creature gets +2/+0 and gains haste until end of turn. I think I'd rather have Anger in my cube than play this card.
Really? I don't like that guy.
You kind of like this guy? I mean, he's not terrible. He's Hill Giant. But I think I'd still rather have something a little more consistent I can count on.
Like, how sweet is this?
Like, who's the three casting cost guy from Dragon's Maze that has haste and makes all your creatures attack every turn? Makes all your creatures have haste and he has to attack every turn?
No, it's all creatures you control gain haste and have to attack every turn.
Either way.
Yeah.
I think that might still be better.
I don't know. +2/+0 is, like, not insignificant.
No, I agree.
Like, curve this guy into, what's it? CGA Commander? Woo! Sussy.
Like, that's good. Alternatively, cast this card and then...
The obvious comparison is this versus Hellrider, right?
Oh, that's not a comparison. You can't compare those things.
I don't know. I think they're close. Or at least they're, like, comparable. Bonus damage for your attackers, things that are good with more, like, tokens or more attacking in general.
I mean, the fact that he's not a 1/2 for 4 is pretty good.
Yeah.
So this card is literally just an enchantment in the Web of War from, what is it, Betrayers of Kamigawa, I think? Yeah, Betrayers of Kamigawa.
Nice shot.
But that limited format was so annoying that card was definitely very good in it.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
New Sliver creature.
Also known as Limited Bomb Sliver.
Oh, wow, this deals damage to creature. I thought this was Hellrider Sliver.
No, Thorncaster Sliver is just a 2/2 for 5, but whenever a Sliver creature you control attacks, it can deal 1 damage to target creature or player. So that's happening.
This boat is real.
Right. So far from today's cards, up until this point, Liliana's Reaver is like the only one. Scroll down, they're like, we would even consider for cube.
We very briefly, no.
No. Going down. No.
Yeah.
All right. So Liliana's Reaver was the first one that's serious consideration. This next coming card is got to be the one that's probably the most talked about so far as this new crop of cards for cube, and that would be Young Pyromancer. Who initially, when I saw it, and maybe the spoil got changed, but I saw a 1/1 for 2. But this card is actually a 2/1 for a red.
I saw a 1/1 as well.
You also saw a 1/1? Yeah, I feel like that was what it was
this
initially.
This is now way better.
Right.
Wow. That is a real card. And the fact that the tokens don't die at end of turn?
Yes.
I really like that card.
Okay, well, that... There's already a lot more than I thought I was going to get out of you. Maybe it's a super sweet one with this Ogre Battle Driver you're all about, too. So, Young Pyromancer, for those uninitiated, we're talking about a 2/1 for red and a colorless. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a 1/1 red elemental creature token onto the battlefield. And end of story.
I like it.
It doesn't, like, die at end of turn. It doesn't have, like, a can't block. It doesn't...
Right.
It just makes guys.
I just think that's a great way for the red deck, you know, to continue advancing its board position when it has to spend time and mana to remove blockers.
I mean, it's just red Jade Mage, to me. That's like, you know, the red mage doesn't want to spend his live long day tapping a bunch of mana to make guys slowly. He wants to be using his spells effectively like he always is. And it's actually, you know, that's a good point in chat. It seems like an excellent card for that kind of homely red-blue color combination in cube right now.
Mm-hmm. Counter spell, get a 1/1.
Oh, yeah, I like it.
Draw card, get a 1/1.
Yeah, and he's efficiently costed a lot more than Tolrand. And then there's Gutter Snipe, who is just more of a win more card. Mm-hmm. We found with Gutter Snipe.
So I like that guy. Into the Wilds, beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land, put it into play for 3 and a green. No thanks. It's like a funky Oracle of Moldiah that is also an enchantment. Primeval Bounty, another enchantment. This one
loving
costs,
it!
This one costs 6. Whenever you cast a creature, get a 3/3 green beast.
Boom!
Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put 3+1/+1 counters on a creature you control.
Boom!
Whenever a land enters the battlefield under control, gain 3 life.
Boom! All upside all the time!
I mean, those are 3 really powerful effects. is it really worth five and a green?
That's the question. The better question is this worth Academy Rectoring into?
We are always on the lookout for things to do with Academy Rector.
The only thing I don't like about six-mana enchantments that don't actually do anything when you cast them is when they continue to not do anything if you brick. Like, there's one thing to be like, oh, this card's a terrible top deck, it's never going to do anything. There's another thing to be like, well, I've paid all this mana to cast a spell, it didn't do anything. But it's okay. Real soon it's going to be amazing. And then it still doesn't do anything. And you're like, ah, oh, damn it.
Yeah, like, I think this card's good, but not great because of the reasons you described it and the fact that it costs 6 mana. It's certainly interesting, and it certainly maybe has a home. It's very different.
If only it was an enchant land, and that Johnny guy could make more tutus when it could enter the battlefield.
Okay. That seems unnecessary. 4/4/4, whatever.
It's a beast.
Savage Summoning can't be countered. Every once in a while, you know, it feels like every couple of years they print this card. Like, Overmaster or whatever, you know, like...
I don't know, this seems kind of, like, so like Summoning Trap, do you mean?
Yeah, or like Scout's Warning. Like, ways to cast your creatures... at its speed. Like, Summoning Trap's a little bit different.
So Savage Summoning, for those listening, is a single green for an instant. Savage Summoning can't be countered. So you'd think some kind of blue hoser is coming down the line when you read those words. The next creature card you cast this turn can be cast as though it had flash. That spell cannot be countered. That creature enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter. Do all of those little incremental things add up to a quality card in queue?
So, assume this card... This is might be a non sequitur here, but... Assume this card exists as it can't be countered, you can cast a creature at instant speed, and it can't be countered, and then a third ability. Right? So, like, in this case, it's the add a +1/+1 counter to it. What does the third thing on the card need to be in order for it to be good?
Draw a card.
Yeah. That's where I was going to go with it. I mean, draw a card is the obvious one. Like, would you accept less than draw a card?
Well, we look at it this way. Would you accept Scout's Warning?
Oh, the take the countering thing off?
Yeah.
Would you accept Enters Battlefield and then it fights?
Oh, well, duh. Like, if this card didn't have add a +1/+1 counter, and in lieu of that had this creature fights another creature... That would be excellent, because now it would work in both beatdown strategies, as well as, anti-counter strategies, is where, like, playing against an aggressive deck, you're just playing battle growth that can't be cast on a guy that's already in play, which is just awkward. I mean, giving a guy haste on this card doesn't also do anything for me either, because you want to be able to cast it with flash, you want to, like, surprise jump it in at a turn.
What if it was untap a land?
I wouldn't so do
it was, a free.
That wouldn't do anything for me either.
Gaze Cradle. Woo!
I still like Scout's Warning over this card, just because, you know, if you're playing Scout's Warning, you're playing against the creature decks where in a circumstance where they are going to tap out for something because they don't fear anything.
Yeah.
You don't need the can't be countered part because you're playing Smart Magic. You're going to be able to take advantage of it, and you get to replace itself, and just your guy just pops up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I like Savage Summoning as a card. I think it's kind of cool they're doing stuff like that, even in a core set. It just doesn't do enough for me in Cube. I think if you really stop and look at it like this weird battle growth variant, and maybe give your guy flash, it just doesn't quite do enough.
Sporebound. 3/3 for 5, whatever land enters the battlefield, put a put a 1/1 sapling into play.
Next.
Infinite with Life and Limb. On the spot, by the way.
Really? Whenever a land enters the battlefield... Oh, because... Because Life from Limb says that your Sapperlings are also forests?
Right. So, interestingly enough, though, it's infinite, but also you draw the game.
Because it's an unstoppable chain.
It's an unbound loop.
Yeah.
So you need a way to kill Life and Limb with Sporebound.
So, for everyone that misses... Divine Intervention decks in Modern, you have the opportunity to recreate them with a 4-mana green enchantment and a 5-mana vanilla green creature.
Woodborne Behemoth. Turkwood Boars, as long as you control 8 or more lands, it's an 8-8 trample.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. It's a magic card.
Guardian of the Ages. This card's horrible.
Oh, poor the new Elder Landworm. Yes, it is bad. We're talking about a, this is an artifact creature rare. It's a 7/7 for 7 that whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, if Guardian of the Ages has Defender, it loses Defender and gains Trample. Ta-da!
Yeah. Ring of Three Wishes. 5-mana artifact comes into play with 3 wish counters. Pay 5, tap it, remove counter. Demonic Tutor.
So it's the slightly cheaper Planar Portal that you can only use a few times.
But really, if you get to use it all 3 times, you should probably just kind of win the game.
Right, in actual limited, you really only needed to activate Planar Portal like twice to really lock it up. If you had the time...
The first time you get a removal spell, the second time you get your best guy.
Exactly. The first time you activate Planar Portal...
Anything past that is just total gravy.
The first time you activate Portal, you get the card that keeps you in the game. The second time you activate Portal, you get the card that wins you the game. And the third time you activate it, you hope to grab Crawworm or something.
Right.
We have
Sliver Construct, creature type Sliver Construct, which I enjoy. Okay. So, they literally wrote that on a napkin, and it just went straight into the design file.
Sure. We have another one of the trinkets. Then we have Vial of Poison, which I think is a really sweet flavor card.
Yeah.
You can Trinket Mage for it. Then you could activate it on your Triskelion, and your Triskelion could go nutso. It's not happening, but it's cute. It's cute.
Yeah. For those who haven't seen it, 1-mana artifact, pay 1, sack it, target creature gains death touch until end of turn.
Ding!
So past this, we've got...
We got some of the game day promo spoils.
Hive Stirring, which we already talked about.
That's the colorless one. And then with the very last card that's currently on this... No, there are more cards.
Goblin Diplomats.
Yeah, this was actually last night.
2/1 for 1 and a red.
So we have a Goblin Piker that can tap to make each creature attack this turn if able. So kind of like Mega Nettling Imp.
Meh.
Not going to make it in cube. It's cute. It's cute. Fun.
It's going to screw up a lot of limiting games.
Yeah.
Like Alluring Siren was always just annoying as all hell.
Oh yeah, I mean you want to be able to break stalls in Corset Limited, and if this format's maybe a little bit slower than previous limited formats, then a card like this is nice to have, even though it's rare. But having that kind of effect is good. For cube, not so much.
Ratchet Bomb reprint.
Good for Ratchet Bomb.
Take that, Advent of the Worm.
Yes.
Colossal Whale, also known as the new Your Mom joke card.
I endorse it.
5 and double blue for a 5/5 island walk. When it attacks, exile target creature defending player controls until Colossal Whale leaves the battlefield. So that thing's quite the bomb if you can attack with it.
Colossal Whale...
Actually, it's island walk, not island home, so yeah.
Yeah.
That thing's just a bomb.
They have stripped the home.
I forgot the sudden ability anymore. Okay.
Colossal Whale is probably my favorite card in all of M14 right now.
Like, flavor-wise?
Oh, the complete package.
I mean, like,
The artwork is spectacular.
It's a street beating, also. I mean, could you imagine facing that thing in the Unlimited? Like, you have to chump it because it's a 5/5, and it's eating. Like, it gets your best guy and worst guy every turn. That's pretty rough.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like me a Colossal Whale. I don't know if it's really cube-worthy... 7-mana blue creatures. We already just got Aether Languages, 7-mana blue creatures, so you gotta try pretty hard to get in at that casting cost. But, you know, it's worth a shot.
Wind Raider Sphinx.
So we've got
speaking of 7-mana blue creatures.
Yeah, we got double blue and 5 for a 3/7 flyer. What this card isn't dying to, I'm not entirely sure. But, okay. And then every time a creature with flying... every time a creature with flying attacks, it doesn't have to be yours.
No.
You may draw a card.
So, you get both sides.
All I'm saying is Lingering Souls.
Yeah.
Turn 3, Lingering Souls. Turn 4, Flashy. Lingering Souls. Fog, maybe? Yeah. Turn 5, Umbarial Rites this guy?
Okay, the other turns obviously had a lot of stuff going on, and then
Turn 1 Faithless Looting, turn 2 Mulch.
There we go. Okay,
maybe
Grisly Savage.
How about Tracker's Instincts?
You gotta get deeper.
Go deeper. Right, so that way you could like turn three Grizzly Salvage again, and then turn four double Lingering Souls from your graveyard.
Sure, why not?
These things are real. This
is quite the five color deck we just brewed.
Now, of course, that's all standard and not at all cube.
Yeah.
As far as cube goes, that's a big but.
It cannot lie.
But at the same time,
a small front.
Yeah.
All backside, no front side is not the way to be as a cube card.
I mean, this is definitely the most, like, upfront thieving magpie there ever was. But, you know, that's what you get for 7 mana.
Yeah. Last but not least, Scourge of Valkas, 2 and triple red for a 4/4 flying dragon. Whenever it or another dragon enters the battlefield under your control, deals X damage to a creature or player, where X is the number of dragons you control, and then it has fire breathing.
Step one, overload, what is the dragon size or whatever?
Oh, Dragon Shift.
Dragon Shift, and then cast this guy. What?
Deal, like, 5 damage, maybe?
I don't know. This is barely a magic card. It's mostly a flavor-filled dragon.
The fact that this only does 1 damage when you play it to something is really disappointing. The fact that it doesn't have haste. The fact that you have to jam a deck full of dragons somehow. Like, it's like some kind of weird, like, obviously, that effect is not really there for limited.
The fact that it only has 4 toughness when we're pretty sure we're going to see a Flame Slash real soon. Maybe if this had been a 3/5, it would be a lot better.
How about just a 5/5? Like, Thundermaw Hellkite is laughing all the way to the bank at this guy. He's like, yeah, nice follow-up, guys.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. You can't all be winners.
Yeah.
So that does this for M14. Long story short, it looks like we've got 2 cards that we're interested in from this new round of spoilers.
So far. And I mean, we're still very early in the spoiler season. I mean, most of these are leaks.
Both of them are aggressively costed creatures that make creature tokens.
Yeah, go figure.
And one Colossal Whale.
That's going to be the new pet card.
I really want to find a way to put it into cube.
If you control Colossal Whale and Raging Cougar at the same time, you win the game.
Oh, wow.
If Colossal Whale eats a Raging Cougar, you win the game.
I endorse all these things. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, I was just kind of brainstorming on Twitter last week. How do you feel about adding Benelish Hero to cube? wait, you have to go look it up?
The banning thing?
Yeah.
No. What? I don't want to explain banning to people. Nor do I want to play with that. It's a 1/1 banning for 1, right?
Yeah.
Why? What? Why? Why you do this?
Why?
Yeah.
Because it would be sweet. Because banding is actually a good ability.
Yeah.
Like, it would give kind of a little bit more of a reach to white weenie strategies. I mean, there was counterpoints made on the internet that Shield Bearer is probably a considerably better card. Do you know what that does, Zach?
Oh, 2 for 2 with banning?
No, why don't you show the people at home? And then you show them, then I'll...
Jesus Christ.
I don't know. How much magic...
You need either more hours at work or something, I don't know. Like...
How many,
Here we go. All right. Oh, my mistake. An 0-3 for 2.
Oh, nigh unstoppable in combat.
I mean, like... Just look at how big the card the Oracle text for banding is.
It's a lot.
Like, I don't want War and Peace, like, the magic cards. Like, Cube is already confusing enough without banding or phasing now, thankfully.
There's like 2 or 3 good phasing cards. Like, one of the best phasing cards is just Reality Ripple.
Oh, Rainbow of Freed.
Oh, yeah. Because
that's the one that's...
That was, like, pre M10 rules, that card was actually good.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't have... You know, anything that has classic phasing, kind of by its nature, isn't good. But anything that can phase out by choice, by its nature,
is good. Yeah.
So, you've got that going for you. Long story short, banding strong.
I'm walking away from the show if you put that on the cube.
I really want... If Shieldbearer cost 1 white, it would be a different story. But then again, Magic Design, even back in the day, they knew 03 banding for one, too good. Too good.
Why don't you just put, like, Slagworm armor in the cube?
You can trick a page for it. You
can't attack, though.
Neither can...
Ventless Hero can attack, though.
Oh, my mistake. The 1-1 can attack, yes.
Well, not a segue better could there be than going from talking about Ventless Hero to the death of the oldest format in all of Magic. But, really, the big question of the week is Vintage dead? Is Cube the new Vintage? How are things these things related or unrelated? Is it real? Is it not?
So one of the things that sparked this conversation and this point of discussion is the Bazaar of Moxen event, which was a few weeks ago now.
Looks like the 12th.
Yeah. So a little about 2 weeks ago in Europe, and it's the big Vintage event of the year
in that area. Now, it's also good to point out that prior to this year, the big North American one was held at Gen Con, the Vintage Championships,
right,
which they've been kind of supporting pretty well. I mean,
not anymore. Yeah, I mean, you saw the...
I was getting to that, yes.
Oh, okay. Spoiler alert, sorry.
So another sign, you know, Magic is reaching 20 years old, and this hallowed ground of Magic playing for the Vintage format is now being lifted. And the Vintage and Legacy World Champ, or whatever they want to call it, will not be held at Gen Con this year, as per an announcement from Wizards of the Coast, and has yet to be rescheduled with a new location.
And I think...
To be fair, they said they will. The tournament will take place, but it's just not the same.
I just... You know, my opinion on Vintage is just... I don't necessarily mind, like, the... You get to play with everything. It's restricted cards instead of banned cards and things like that. Or the potential problems that come with it. Because I see that, you know, Legacy is a fixed Vintage. You know, I think it mostly has to do with card availability. And specifically, like, Vintage tournaments, if you're playing in a no-proxy environment.
Which is what's very popular in Europe, which is what makes an event like the Bazaar of Moxen kind of the benchmark for Vintage. Because, you know, in theory, you're the most... serious people playing it. I mean, you've probably tested the most. I mean, that's not a guarantee, but yeah, there's kind of the general rule of thumb is in Europe that Vintage and Legacy with the real cards is taken considerably more seriously than it is in North America. So you look to an event like this to really kind of be the benchmark.
And it just, to me, you know, I don't really... There's just such a hard cap on card availability for stuff like Lotus and Moxen and Recalls and Time Walks and stuff, that it's just not going to be possible for the format to ever be... It can only get smaller. As cards, you know, for whatever reason...
Slowly disintegrate.
Yeah, either literally turn to dust, people buy them up and don't play them, you know, or sitting on them in a collection, you know. I mean, shit, we got Power in the Cube. That's a Vintage deck that isn't being played, you know. So the more things that happen, that those cards are not entering the player pool at all, they're only going away. So the only way that the Vintage player pool can go is smaller. And that's just, you know, no one is going to say that's a healthy way for a format to be. So, I just don't think it's a thing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of the Vintage holdouts are often the most vocal people saying, like, how can you debate that 300 people showed up for... this event 2 weeks ago, and the Vintage is dead.
300 whole people, huh?
Yeah. Magic Grand Prix.
When was the last time a Grand Prix had less than, like, 900? Anywhere.
Yes. 300 people. If you're scaling Magic tournaments proportionally, 300 is a drop in the bucket in terms of Magic tournaments. And if this is supposed to be the marquee, the big Vintage event of the year...
Even compare it to Legacy events. You know, when they do Legacy GPs even... You know, or big Legacy tournaments and other events, they get, you know, there was one in Europe that had like 2,000 people, right?
Over, yeah, it was 22 yeah. And change.
Well, I mean, and that's almost entirely a function of availability, of card availability. There just aren't, you know, 2,000 something Black Lotuses running around for these people to play with, you know.
In that one event.
In that one, yeah, in that one area. There's not 2,000 Time Walks, there's not... So there's just, it can't
by the function of the card availability and just the reality of that, it can only go down.
And that's not even, you know, talking about, is the format stagnant? Is there room for growth? Are cards ever printed for vintage? What are things really like?
I mean, I think cards are printed, maybe not necessarily for vintage, but vintage decks certainly use new cards, as we can look at. You know, you've got the deck list right here.
Use new cards, but I feel like it's been a long time since it's been like, oh, this card is definitely going to have great vintage impact.
As Deathrite Shaman, is a four of.
Don't get me wrong, I love it. I feel like back at the Pro Tour Return to Ravnica, you know, I didn't call it before the event, but during that event, it was like, wow, this card really does everything. You could see it in all Eternal formats, and I'm glad to see it is here. That's not really my question. I mean, I look at cards like Spell Pierce and Snapcaster Mage being like, those are cards that are really strong and could see action in Vintage, but they aren't printed specifically for Vintage. I don't think anything is really done in that vein anymore.
No.
Because Wizards is definitely just really taking their eye off of the whole thing. It's just gonna...
If cards are printed for Eternal formats, they're printed for Modern and or Legacy. Deathrite Shaman being the most obvious example of that. They've already said like this very clearly, like a card they were printed with Modern in mind, and it's also just obviously good in other formats as well.
Fetch lands.
Right.
So, yes, here we are, 20 years later in Magic. And the holdouts are kind of few and far between. I feel like Vintage is just kind of being, like, just kind of let out to pasture. Just to kind of go and do its own thing. I mean, again, if we're... Like, I'm not... You know, the sites are still covering this event. Yeah, that's a sweet staffing in.
Luckily, it
kills Bob.
That's a bold choice.
Double workshop into staffing in? Kill Bob, draw cards? We used to intuition for Fire Ices all day long. Good times.
I mean, Modern... So
Modern is the controllable Eternal format.
Right. So the biggest difference between Modern and, like, say, Legacy... Legacy, they'll ban cards and they'll adjust the ban list, things like that. But they've explicitly kind of described Modern as a curated Eternal format, where they're very active in terms of what's legal and what's not legal, to try and shape the metagame as much as possible, to not let it get away from them. And that's not to say Legacy, the metagame is completely, like, run amok, but it's just, you know, there's just so many decks, and it's so wide open and so crazy that it's not necessarily that big of a concern.
See, like, this top four list, this Jace control deck is very, like, many, 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 many Vintage decks look just like this, and there's... You're only really even manipulating 8 to 10 to 12 cards at most in your deck.
Right,
you're
like,
just playing this, like...
If every Mox, you've got an Ancestral Recall, it's like, how many of these cards can you really change? You know what I mean?
Not many. I mean, this one doesn't have the Tezzeret anymore.
It's like two Lightning Bolts and a Hercules Recall.
Yeah, we played, like, two Intuition, like, we've done some riffs on this many times when we're brewing for Vintage.
Just take all the best cards ever and slam them together.
Yeah.
It's got the Time Vault, the Voltaic Key.
Oh, yeah, everybody does. Like, I mean, I like Oath over all these decks anyway. My point is, I think Q is really where the new Vintage is. All the things you could do in Vintage, minus maybe Bomberman.
I do absolutely love Bomberman.
But you don't want to put it in Cube.
Well, no.
What the hell are you going to do with an Oriok Salvagers in Cube?
Nothing. But I this is one of my favorite, like, kind of halfway competitive, halfway for fun decks thrown together with Graft Chaff from Onmoto.
Yeah, I mean, I think when Fifth Dawn came out, you were actually playing a little bit of Vintage, and you were super stoked to find out there was a deck that was playing Salvagers and Trinket Mage in Vintage.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've definitely played, like, this. When Mirian was in Standard, I definitely played this deck with Standard cards. So, obviously, a little less powerful, but, you know, it was just all value, like, just Trinket Mage for Aether Spellbomb and Pirate Spellbomb, like, cycling value all over the place with various stations.
Ah, yes.
You know, and stuff like that. Like, that deck was very, very fun.
So, you know, now we're at a point in Magic where, you know, I love Vintage.
Also, complete deck price, $14,650. Like, you know, when we talked about how much it costs to put a cube together?
Yes.
You know,
I don't know where they're getting those prices are. It seems a little high, but again, I love vintage. Again, you know, in the last 24 months of Grand Prix, and ones I've attended or ones I've just looked at the side event schedules of, there have been very few opportunities to play a sanctioned vintage event. And that's really, to me, like a really strong sign that this format is just something that Wizards is going to happily discontinue acknowledgement of in the foreseeable future, in my opinion. The people that are going to be really kind of strong advocates for it are going to be just that in the future. I think that the more Commander, EDH, whatever you want to call it, gets played, the more that that becomes kind of the front runner for the non-constructed, based, everyday, run-of-the-mill PTQ format.
It's going to take a lot for anything to adjust the vintage band or restricted list at this point.
They just unrestricted something in the last update. They just gave us back regrowth. Go wild.
Okay.
Yes, they are bringing power to Modo, but they're not bringing power. It's like, I don't really agree with people saying, like, oh, well, they're bringing power to Modo. That means vintage is going to be Modo. People are going to play vintage all the time on Modo. No, it's like the Power Cube drafting on Modo. Like, people are going to want to do it for a little while. There will be novelty there, but really quickly it's going to be like, well, this is just degenerate and no way fun.
Yeah.
Like, why would I put real money into playing these matches?
Right. And it's not like it's going to be like, get your set of Moxit for $10 on Modo. It's going to cost a ton if it even, you know, is acquirable in that fashion.
So. Either way, what I'm saying is, I think that there's still a great way to enjoy power and what feel like vintage matches. And to me, that's really what Cube and Powered Cube can kind of evolve into. And that's why I really think that we've done an excellent job incorporating cards like Oath of Ghouls into Cube. I don't think there's a really good way to do that with Time Vault. But, you know, we're finding a way to do that. And I think that's the future, to me, of what vintage Magic is going to be. It's not going to be like, oh, well, I drew the Trinisphere draw versus your single Force of War, like your no Force of Will hand, or you drew the double Force hand versus my single Force for Tinker hand. Like, oh, well, this was exciting. And, you know, 40 people will come to, not even a Grand Prix, will come to, like, a Worlds weekend and play. That would have to be sanctioned. Like, just, you have these tiny, tiny pockets of people that play their, like, small proxy communities locally. Talk about it on, like, one website about vintage. And then you have one or two events a year that are, like, sanctioned and kind of given some publicity. And that's so community-driven right now. That's not really backed or supported by Wizards of the Coast. And it's only going to lessen. And I think at an accelerated rate, as Magic reaches larger audiences with newer formats and continues to push out products for those newer formats, it's...
Vintage is basically impossible to get into.
Virtually. It's not impossible. It's virtually impossible. It's
sure.
It's to start from scratch. Impossible. To start from scratch today to choose to play vintage. I mean, you gotta have someone to play against.
Right, you have to buy two decks.
Yeah, is almost impossible. I know. You know, Heather Dawn from Legit MTG. She has a love for the old Magic cards, which I enjoy. But you know, she's coming at it from a budget perspective. She's having difficulty, like, you know, effectively testing these things, kind of doing it through like Google chat and stuff like that. Are we stopping to look at what the Iron Sheik has to say about Daft Punk?
I just saw that.
It could be entertaining, I don't know. Yeah. So that's where we're kind of at, and it's funny to me how much people kind of want to clash over, like, you know, vintage is still alive and thriving. Look at how diverse the format is. Look at how many people should have
been involved. 4 whole decks of this topic.
Almost 300 people for the biggest event in all of the land with the most vintage cards.
Like, yeah.
And I love it. I wish I could play Sanctioned Vintage. I mean, I enjoy the format. I just don't think it's the future of where Magic is. And that's what allows Cube to kind of fill that hole and kind of have an opportunity to really do a whole lot with Magic's history and kind of even step up the game a little bit more in what you can do with it. And that's why I like exploring those areas. And you know, maybe it just means finding a way to better incorporate a Tolarian Academy in the future, or finding a Yogg-Will strategy that isn't all or nothing. I don't know.
Why rob a bank, just rob the Bazaar of Moxit? Okay. I mean, that's pretty close. The cost of it is, you know, not even in the top couple of problems with where Vintage is at right now. I mean, obviously it's a huge deal, but you know, it doesn't matter how much the cards cost if no one can get them anyway. Like, it wouldn't matter if there were, you know, 50,000 people who wanted to play Vintage actively and had, like, briefcases full of money. There just aren't enough cards, like, physically on the planet to support that number of players.
And we're already running, running into that with Legacy, which, you know, is openly talked about all the time, and that's, you know, a format that you could definitely see the relationships, because you have an entity in StarZ Games attempting to run those events all the time and really kind of pushing the boundaries of how many people can have access to this on a competitive scale.
Yeah, Legacy is still, it's a lot more accessible, you know, it is having some card availability issues at this point, but they're much, like, the card pools are so much larger.
Well, and it's a secondary market paradise. Like, an entity like Star City Games, it has every reason to support and kind of nurture Legacy, because they have so much more control over the entire format than they do over Standard, and the cards get printed in it, and the way they're distributed. Legacy is a small enough kind of corral to wrangle that it's like, well, you know, we know we can have a good surplus of this stuff that's hard to get in all these other places that we can then kind of redistribute to have for our events.
I mean, I think it's just a function of any format, you know. Obviously, Magic cards are printed as to the demand that exists when the set gets released, or close to it, or as close as possible, right? It's not like they're just printing...
He says this on the eve of Modern Masters.
Well, I mean, but because demand now is so much larger than it was even from when those sets... You know, Modern Masters is only Alara Black backwards, which is 4 years at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, and even in those 4 years, demand and player base has gone up and up and up. And it's just going to be a continual problem when you have, like, quote-unquote eternal formats, like long form, rather than just standard or block, where, okay, right now... Modern, you know, there's a million players who want to play Modern, so we're going to print enough cards so that a million players can play Modern, okay? And then, you know, if you continue 10 years down the line, now 5 million people want to play Modern, but there's only enough cards to support a fifth of that still in the... We have to make more reprints, or we have to, you know, change the system.
And they have the capacity and the ability to do that. I mean, we're not even going to have a conversation about this reserve list thing.
Legacy is already running into some of the earlier problems that have besieged Vintage, and it's only going to get worse as the player base grows and the cards pool shrinks. It only goes down.
Yeah, and you know, while I don't see a motive for Wizards to really, like, you know, come out on their website and be like, "We're just done with Vintage." Effectively done that, especially with the announcement about Vintage World Champs. I mean, I would be astonished if the announcement came back and be like, you know what? You know how much you like that Pro Tour and how snazzy all that information is? Well, bam! Now you get that with Legacy and Vintage Championships. We're going to cover the hell out of this thing. It's going to be super exciting.
Everybody out to Puerto Rico and have a crazy thing.
It's going to be 4 days of intense feature match coverage, and you're going to love every minute of Turn 1 Tinker for Blightsteel Colossus. I just don't
see it.
Yeah. So, that was more of a rant about Vintage than I thought it was going to be, more about the excitement that is what Vintage and Cube kind of becoming married together can offer you. But that's kind of, you know, that's part of the pitch to me for why you'd have a Powered Cube, why you would want to play with all those great cards from Magic's history that don't necessarily have an active home right now, and where you'd really want to, Ak is a little obsessed with the Iron Sheik, and I can only read it in bits, so it's really hard. ADD generation.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, if it's a great place for, like, CE power and that kind of stuff. I mean,
there's a lot more, because Cube is an unofficial format, you know, there's a lot more you can get
unsanctioned.
Right, you can get away with a lot more. You know, they could theoretically have a new collector's edition that came out. The Cube Starter box, it's just, like, a bunch of, like, effectively, like, very nice looking...
And how gross would that be if they did, like, another Collector's Edition style that was, like, the Magic Cube?
Right.
That came, like, the Moto Cube. Nice...
Like, they, like, printed, like, the Moto Cube and just, like, printed them in, like, gift boxes for the holidays.
$400!
Right. Like, and they could do that. Like, they're just all, you know, they're not real cards, or, you know, they're effectively very nice proxies. And you just, like, start with that, like, comes in a nice box and everything, like, sleeves... And then, like, the
Xbox One? Cube starter set.
Right, like, they could absolutely
what would you rather?
They could absolutely do that. You know, whereas, you know, they just can't do that because of secondary markets and everything else with, you know, vintage and legacy. If they, you know, I don't see them doing a Cube product like that probably anytime soon, you know. But then again, I never thought that they would be printing, like, EDH starter decks either.
Yeah, so. I mean, I definitely, the initial reaction to the Commander product was like, wow, I can't believe you're going there. And it really kind of opened up the door for all these other kind of product opportunities that I think are possible for Cube.
Yeah.
Does that mean that they're going to show us anything from Vintage? Probably not. But,
you never know. I mean,
well, the reserve list, we do know.
But I mean,
and that's kind of where the part of the problems are. I'm just saying, like, here I am talking about how Vintage is going to die, but I still think picking up a Mishra's Workshop and picking up a Bazaar of Baghdad are worthwhile ventures because those can be fun Cube cards to play with in what will eventually, to me, feel like the eternal format of Magic. I think that's what Vintage will feel like to me in a few years. I mean,
Cube just feels so much more fresh to me than, like... I feel like, you know, we looked a little bit at the Bazaar of Mox and Vintage top 8, and I feel like I've been looking at those deck lists for 10 years. Or close, you know, like close
it's
to.
It's all a matter of perspective, Beck. It's all a matter of perspective. Somebody else is going to come talk to you and be like, hey, look at all those exciting new cards that weren't there in last year's deck list.
They changed.
There's like 8 new cards
old
there.
Cards, yeah. Woo! So, you know, Cube is a great way to play with power and play with old cards that you never get to play with anymore, but in a context that is more relevant to modern Magic and in a way that is fun for more people, it's more accessible, you know, it just... Only one person has to spend all the money to let everybody play, as opposed to everybody ponying up 10 Gs.
Strip your Vintage decks. Build powered cubes!
It's a lot more fun.
More fun to be had by all.
Yeah.
That's the Vintage soapbox. I will miss Vintage. I don't think that... You know, again, with all the Grand Prix I've gone to, I think the last Grand Prix I went to with a Vintage side event that I played in was like 2010? There was like 30 people.
Yeah.
5 rounds? Yeah. 3-1-1.
It's just, you know, it is what it is, and it's unfortunate, you know. It's not that I am taking pleasure in seeing Vintage, like, grow old and die. It's not
no,
that at all.
No,
it's
I
just
don't think I'll...
You have to face the reality of it, like...
I'll never have another opportunity to watch Ek deck himself in a format with Multani's presence.
Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Never get to watch... I sit down across from an opponent and go turn one, Swamp, Dark Ritual, Hypnotic Spectre, go.
Yeah, you can do that in Cube right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, what a little surprise!
Yeah, so...
Hey!
Yeah. It's just... Yeah.
Sorry. I should have said Bayou. It was a Bayou. The last time someone did that...
Do that again.
The last time someone did that to me, it was a Bayou, and I believe they had Naturalized just in their deck.
Still do that in Cube.
Okay. Not Scrubland and Swords of Plowshares and Disenchant. Bayou.
Still do that in Cube.
They might have had Regrowth in their deck, too. I can't remember.
Still doing that in Cube.
Yeah, that's true. Alright. That's going to wrap us up for this week on the Magic Box. Feel free to chime in with your feelings on the strength, the health, how powerful Vintage is as a format, and how you play it every week with your friends and family, and how you're looking forward to making an even stronger comeback in 2013 with 20 years of Magic and power coming to the MTGO platform. Until then, you can find us every week on Twitch TV at twitch.tv/Ekamon. We're on MTGcast from time to time. They've been pretty good about posting our stuff lately, so thanks to them. Check us out on Twitter at Tristan Gregson for myself and at Young Mecha for Ek. Feel free to send all your love and hate mail to draftcube@gmail.com.
One thing, just as a heads up, as you... may have noticed, obviously, this is not a Wednesday.
Oh, yes.
This is a Tuesday, yes. If you're on the live side of things.
We will probably be moving to this day a little more permanently.
Yeah, because of adjustments in schedule, I have a new job, and
I have a
T-Bone here is going back to school.
Shifted school schedule.
So, Wednesdays are kind of no longer going to be our day. So
it's probably going to be
Tuesdays. We're going to shoot for Tuesdays, but it might change even from this point forward, so stay tuned. To, you know, the social media side of things, we'll update people as best we can.
In theory, the next Cube League will start on a Tuesday.
I mean, hopefully.
Like, in theory.
We'll know a lot more next week. We'll have a lot better ability to nail down everything.
Ak changes hairstyle because his mom got married. That's actually why that happened.
My mother was married on Saturday.
It was not to him, if that's what you're wondering from the change of hairstyle. He just
that would be weird.
Well, it sounded a little weird when we were talking about it. Yeah. Like,
So got cleaned up for that. But yeah, so hopefully next week we'll have a little more solid information. It may be something that, you know, we're going back to a more of an evening time recording as opposed to during the day.
We're a little bit more up in the air. I mean, we're committed to doing this live every week, hopefully at a time that is already... I mean, we're only 15 episodes old, and we're trying to still find that sweet spot for people. You know, we really kind of hit a groove in the last month or so with Wednesday afternoons for us, evenings for the East Coast. I mean, you know, topping out at around 70 viewers live has been really nice. We just need to find that kind of new groove. You know, if anything I've learned about kind of podcasting and reaching an audience, consistency is what works. As long as you're always there week after week at the same time.
That's why I kind of wanted to try and make it as, like, you know, stay tuned, get an update, you know, when we figure out our new time.
Last but not least, if you want to see us on a more consistent basis and you want to see us do more fun, exciting stuff, please donate. The link is at the bottom of the Twitch page. You can find it at the blog page, ekamon.blogspot.com. Really want to see Ek eat that cube of power.
Yeah.
He's so excited about it. And we're about to go eat copious amounts of food, drink beer, and watch a hockey game. And you're concerned about eating 9 small Wendy's patties?
That's just, that's gross.
You could have a beer after.
Oh, no part of this sounds good.
So that's something we may be exploring in the future. Either way, you know, we want to bring you more. And since we are currently trying to find a better title sponsor to work with the show, it's all coming from you guys out there. So anything you can send us as far as donations, we'll bring you more. More updates. More information about why vintage is or is not a thing.
More CubeRat scenarios. More streaming when they bring Cube back on Moto so we can complain about it again. More everything.
Well, we don't know. Good things could happen.
You never know.
We don't know. But thanks again for watching or listening, everyone, and we will see you next week.